The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at coopradio.org.
On today's show, we're looking at what needs to happen to get the city to respond more urgently and aggressively to ending homelessness, particularly as tensions rise around the Strathcona Tent City and people continue to fight court battles over contempt of an injunction at the Crab Park encampment from its displacement in June. Now, we talked to Pete Fry, a city councillor with the Green Party, about his proposal that the city look more closely at what would need to be amended to create a tiny home village to provide people small, lockable houses that are separate, that they can decorate, take care of, and leave their possessions in for at least some people among the homeless population. You can read more about this issue and their discussion in my latest piece in the Tyee at thetyee.ca about tiny home villages. After Fry, we'll talk to Councillor Lisa Dominato to hear what she thinks of his idea. First up, Councillor Fry. First of all, tell me a little bit about your resolution put forward and is now being debated in council.
Yeah, so it's really expanding on some of the longstanding conversations that folks in the city have been having around tiny homes, including advocates like the BC Tiny Home Collective, and then, of course, the recent amendment that Councillor Swanson added to the mayor's emergency homeless motion, considering tiny home villages as a possible solution, and recognizing that in the midst of all this, we have no actual ability within our building code bylaw or our zoning regulations to actually implement things like tiny homes, be it villages or tiny shelters or any of these kind of things, because they don't actually meet our building code. So really, while we can discuss these kind of hypothetical options and consideration, they won't go anywhere until we actually have some work done on our code. So this is really kind of a technical direction to our staff to look at what we need to do, what we need to amend to make it possible to actually include tiny homes in the sort of housing continuum.
Could you talk about the staff report that came back? Because some are saying that it kind of threw cold water on the idea.
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, this motion was submitted before that staff report came back, but my motion sort of anticipates what staff came back with, which is to say that there's nothing in the building bylaw or the zoning regulations that would support tiny homes right now. So as an emergency response, it's just not feasible.
Hmm. But that could change because, of course, that is under the purview of city government, correct?
Yeah, but, you know, our building bylaws are quite rigorous and really thoughtfully put together. And they really, you know, take consideration around things like, you know, access and egress, life safety stuff like fire safety. So it's not something to just sort of be cavalier about amending on the fly. It really does require that we do the sort of due diligence with our chief building officer, with our engineering, with our fire safety folks. So there is a bit to it, and that's what we kind of what I'm trying to recognize in this motion is taking a practical look at what we would need to do to make this happen.
The cost is low. Tell us a bit about that. You say it's under $20,000 per unit.
There are models. Certainly, there's an option out of Seattle, a group called Pallet Shelters, and they have been producing these sort of modular. They're almost like an IKEA. They're aluminum and fiberglass, and they can assemble in less than half an hour. They have a 67 square foot model, 100 square foot model. And they have fold-up bunk beds, they have windows, they have locking doors that are wired for electricity and for heat, and they can be popped up in about 30 minutes. So that's just one off-the-shelf model that's available right now. I know that there's been a lot of really interesting work and theoretical work from, like I said, the BC Tiny Home Collective. Local architects have been looking at, like, you know, BOD models that I think Patrick Condon and Scott Hine have explored in the Tyee, and these are real possible workable solutions. We just need to move the dial a little bit on some of the regulatory side.
Now, those two architects, I've talked to them, and one of the proposals is to potentially use the plaza at City Hall. What do you think of that idea?
Yeah, and I know that's another architect, Bryn Davidson, has also been really active in that conversation. I think it's an interesting idea. I think obviously it would need to be approached in a very practical and thoughtful way. And I think, many years ago, I went down to Portland to look at tiny homes in 2014 when I first ran for political office. Actually, that was kind of one of my platform planks.
I remember that, actually.
Yeah, and I did an article with Pete McMartin, actually, did a story on it in the Sun back then. I visited a number of different kind of variations of the tiny home thing, everything from like sort of Airbnb tiny home options to co-housing kind of tiny home options, and most notably Dignity Village. Now, Dignity Village was a really fantastic tiny home community on city-owned land, with some really, really set out rules and regulations around it. And one of the big ones was that it was a sober community. So there was zero tolerance for drugs and alcohol. There was zero tolerance for theft. And I think those are were inherent to the success and ongoing success of Dignity Village. And I think that those are the kind of considerations, if we were going to realistically do something like that in a place like the Helena Gutridge Plaza at City Hall, we would have to be very thoughtful around who would be tenanting it and how it would be managed. Because these are, you know, pretty serious. It's not like we would just have a free-for-all on the lawn of City Hall.
Which, I mean, is one of the concerns that's kind of raised tensions around the Strathcona tent city, and I know you've spoken out about this. Can you kind of lay the groundwork for what's not working about the status quo currently, Pete?
Well, I think generally when we look, there was Canadian Alliance to End Homelessness had recently done a pretty thoughtful exploration around big encampments in cities and how they're emerging, and a lot of them are sort of protest-led, and a lot of them they're unmanaged by virtue of how they're run. And I think that there's very little appetite, and all the evidence seems to show, and other jurisdictions are grappling with this, that managed encampments are not really a great solution. So what we've actually looked at, a number of councillors and I, in fact, the original amendment that was directing staff to look at this never mentioned it once managed encampments. Instead, it focused on a disaster relief, a temporary disaster relief shelter system, because managed encampments, as we often see in a lot of the scenarios across North America, they end up being quite permanent and really hard to dismantle. And the objective here is not to have folks living in tents necessarily. The objective is to move folks into more stable housing. And I would say that that's also the objective with a lot of these tiny house villages that we're seeing. There's at least 8 of them in Seattle right now. I think about 400 units of tiny homes in Seattle. And the objective and one of the challenges they grapple with is that it's not a permanent solution. And the goal is to transition folks into actual permanent housing. And this is sort of a step in that direction. But they have to kind of grapple with, like, how do we keep it from being a permanentized thing?
Now, I'm wondering, Pete, I wanted to put some of the criticisms of the idea to you. One is that the real long-term solutions to homelessness require pretty major investments in permanent housing units, social housing units, and also the wraparound services that might be harder to deliver in a tiny house village. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would agree. And I think it's, you know, that's when I mentioned that, you know, sober villages and that kind of thing, it's not a one size fits all. And I think different communities will have different needs. And I think that has to be reflected in how we triage folks who are living rough on the streets or in parks appropriately into permanent housing. So creating that stopgap through, you know, like an enhanced shelter system, basically, which accommodates folks with their stuff and their pets, and which is run 24 hours and really serves to triage people to get them into permanent housing that they need. And through that enhanced shelter kind of option, which would include the sort of disaster relief shelter system that my colleagues and I have envisioned, we'd be ensuring that those wraparound services are there for folks who need it and where they need it and meet people where they're at. So for instance, not everybody's going to need overdose prevention services because not everybody's a drug user. And there may be folks who want to live in a more sober environment, and how do we create options for those folks? And on the, you know, on the flip side of that, people who use drugs, how do we appropriately resource them and service them with the wraparound services that they need, which may also include, you know, referrals for treatment or, you know, harm reduction supplies or, you know, hopefully at some point safe supply.
I guess my last question for you is just, in the long run, what's your hope for this? Like, could this be our version of Victory Gardens from this emergency, a Victory Village, perhaps?
You know, I see the work on the tiny home piece that I've proposed in this motion is not, I want to be clear, it's not just for people who are experiencing or at risk of homelessness. It's really to explore how these options could be used in our housing continuum. So they could also be, you know, for instance, like intergenerational infill housing attached or adjacent to the main house where there's like some, you know, you still have access to the showers, washrooms in the house, that kind of thing. So you don't have to plummet necessarily, but you have a nice little comfortable place where you could lay your head. Or similarly, it could be workforce housing. So, you know, we have a shortage of housing for folks who are working in our city, many of whom can be found in homeless encampments. And how could, you know, folks who were making money and could have, you know, even afford to rent a place, but the vacancy rate being what it is, they're not eligible to, and they're not accessible to those spaces. So we need to get folks in building supportive housing. Where do we house those workers? And so looking at it as a possible solution in the larger vernacular, and really what's also sort of articulated in the motion is looking at these sort of mobile semi-permanent structures that can be, you know, moved on wheels or disassembled and packed up and relocated in another location as need be.
Well, I really appreciate your time. Anything else you wanted to add?
No, I think it was pretty good. Thanks, David.
Thank you so much for making time. Appreciate it, Pete. And that was Vancouver City Councillor Pete Fry. You can read more about his motion and other proposals that he discussed for tiny home villages and other supports for ending homelessness at thetie.ca. Next, we asked Councillor Lisa Dominato with a nonpartisan association what she thought of Councillor Fry's motion, as well as the earlier motion put forward by Jean Swanson, and how she thinks the city needs to approach ending homelessness. Appreciate you making the time. Thanks so much for joining.
Yeah, no problem.
Tell me a little bit about all this sudden movement, it seems, with a variety of motions and amendments to amendments going in the last couple of weeks here on housing. It seems like a bit of a change of pace.
Yeah, certainly. Well, I think for all of council, there's a recognition that housing and housing choice and housing affordability is still top of mind for Vancouverites. And so I brought forward a motion recently around trying to address so that missing middle in the context of housing choices. So trying to get more row homes, townhomes, options for families within the city. But we have had a plethora of motions focused on everything from rental to social housing, supportive housing. And I think it is indicative of council's passion around housing and wanting to find different solutions and to recognize we need a spectrum of housing. So I think there's actually a lot of alignment about around that at council. And so that's why you're seeing that in some sense of urgency and trying to bring forward different ideas and different options. And that's part of the democratic process and member motions.
Now, of course, a lot of this got rolling after Councillor Swanson made an amendment, and then you jumped on board with proposals. Now Pete Fry's on board with another proposal. Is there a risk that this is all going to get washed out into just another series of kind of proposals, or could this lead to some real action? Because I think people are getting really concerned about how bad the homelessness problem is.
I think that it will lead to action. Certainly, homelessness in the city is a challenging issue. It's complex, and it spans decades, as we know. However, I have some optimism around some of the different ideas being tabled, and certainly I am in favor of trying to work collaboratively to address these issues. And I think it's complex. I think we have chronic homelessness. We have issues related to chronic health issues, as well as mental health and addictions as well, that we're grappling with as a city. I'm very interested in the motion. I think it's part of the reason you were calling is around the tiny homes that's being proposed by Councillor Fry. I think there's a lot of merit in looking at that idea and It isn't something that has been explored by the city before. I know other jurisdictions have looked at it, but I think it certainly merits looking at further and seeing what's possible and how we could use that as a transitional housing option for people. Obviously, we'd like to get people ideally into permanent housing and supportive housing, but it may be an option as a transition place.
And what appeals to you about it in terms of that usage?
Well, I've heard from some residents that they're not really comfortable in our shelter system. And as you know, our shelter system is facing challenges with COVID. So with, in terms of limited numbers of people can be in our shelters, some people are not comfortable. This allows a level of independence, a degree of independence in terms of having self-enclosed units. The models I've seen can include an adjunct of shared washrooms and eating spaces as well. But I think that we need to start to think outside the box about how we provide transitional supports for people. We are hearing from residents, individuals who are living in current encampments that while they're there, that's not their ideal. They're not feeling safe in those spaces. They are looking for permanent housing. And so I think that the tiny homes model may be a measure that allows us to provide people with a safe place to sleep and to live.
And for those who aren't comfortable going into other models of housing, it could be that transitional point, as you pointed out. Is there any kind of, what's your reaction when you hear from some of the critics of the idea saying it's kind of just warehousing people, not much different than a tent city itself, when really people need that wraparound residential support that we might find in more traditional social housing models?
Well, I think we need a spectrum of housing. And I've said that from the beginning. And I sat on a chair at a board that has supportive housing throughout the city. And I think it's one model. I understand there's been some models where you have tiny homes and they're operated and managed through nonprofit organizations and faith-based groups. And so I'd be interested in learning more about that and what that looks like. I also think we do need supportive housing with wraparound supports. I've just had a motion passed at council last week calling for an urgent task force around mental health and addictions and how that intersects with housing, because I believe that we do have residents who are vulnerable who do need some added supports and wraparound services, as you're saying. And though it's not one size fits all, I think that's, for me, the conclusion I've come to around housing. We need to provide a range of options. We have women, mothers who are fleeing domestic violence, and so we need to get them out of their homes. It's an unsafe place into something right away. So we've got people that end of the spectrum. We have others that can live more independently and are seeking independence, or maybe they need a transition space and then they want to bridge to a more independent living. And then we have others who are going to need potentially supports around dealing with trauma, depression, or dealing with addictions. To me, it isn't one size fits all. And I think given the deep challenge we're facing with homelessness, not just in the city of Vancouver, we're seeing it across the province, in fact, in a lot of our urban centers, even outside Vancouver and across the country, we need to explore different options.
Now, our radio show and kind of really concerned about the Downtown East Side, I wondered if you could give an assessment of the housing solution so far proposed by our mayor, because there's some people who said, well, the defeat of his affordable housing program a few weeks ago kind of was a sign of ineffectualness, perhaps.
I think that, again, you need to have a range of options. I know that the mayor's tabling a proposal coming this Thursday around acquiring more hotels and motels. I think that the federal government has just announced a $1 billion strategy around looking at that and supporting municipalities in those efforts. I certainly don't think that the city can be going at that alone from a financial standpoint. And if the federal government is going to step up, which many people have been calling for, then I think we should be making an application to the federal government for funds to support those measures. It isn't a way of looking at things, but it isn't the only answer. I don't believe that simply acquiring hotels is the answer. I think that we have to have a range of options on the table. And I certainly know one of the, from my past work, as not only was I involved with the Kettle Society, with, and we have a range of nonprofit housing, but I was also involved with the Kiwanis Club as well. And certainly we need to be striving towards a more permanent social and supportive housing that has the wraparound supports for residents. And we certainly need to be looking at and honing in a little bit more on particularly certain groups. Do we, we've got seniors who are vulnerable. We have individuals struggling with mental health addictions. We have youth. We don't have, I think, sufficient youth housing. That's another group of individuals who are vulnerable living on our streets. And so I think we need to start to look at our housing strategy through that lens, is sort of who are we serving and what are the particular needs? Also women fleeing domestic violence as well with children. Do we have sufficient options for them in the city? And that's something I'd like us to explore further as a council as well.
I wanted to ask also about, there are some people who have been critical of your party, the NPA, particularly at the park board level, but also some city councillors, because of the push to evict the tent cities previously, that's kind of created this Strathcona tent city tensions right now. And I'm wondering if your thoughts on that, is that something that you kind of regret or distance yourself from, or what's your take on how much of this was maybe not the right approach for a tent city?
Well, I said both with, I had a motion around Oppenheimer with Councillor Weeb and in recent discourse around Strathcona, is that we have two things at play. We fundamentally need to, as a society, and it's not just about the city of Vancouver, it's about working with the province and working with the federal government, so the other levels of government, to provide and enable much-needed housing for people who are vulnerable. And in some cases, it might be shelter space. In other cases, it's permanent housing. But we want to get people into a place where they can have a pathway to better quality of life. And I think housing is critical. So we need to do that. On the other hand, we also need to be responsive to the fact that our public parks are there for broad public use. And I think what we've seen in Strathcona, and we also saw in Oppenheimer, was a tipping point where the parks were no longer accessible for public use. And in fact, what we were seeing is enormous public safety concerns that emerged and are continuing right now as we speak in Strathcona, and tensions playing out in that neighborhood. And so we have a dual responsibility to address the housing, but we also need to ensure public safety for people and access to public space. And so I think that's the ongoing conundrum for the city of Vancouver, but not just the city of Vancouver. We're seeing this in other jurisdictions as well. And I do think that we need to get to a place enabling a transition for people. And so I think one of the options that was tabled in a couple of weeks ago was around a disaster relief shelter to provide a place for people to go from Strathcona. I have been advocating with the province. I wrote the premier just before, early August, about advancing and expediting the navigation center that was proposed for the Vancouver. The province is committed to funding it. And again, it's a low barrier shelter that allows people to get a place to sleep, but also has wraparound services so that if you're not getting access to healthcare, somebody's going to be there to help you. If you need support with mental illness, there's going to be support there or addictions or whatever. And I think we need to have some sort of transition place, and we don't have that right now, but we certainly need to be looking at that as an option.
What I'm hearing is that the status quo on homelessness is just not working, though.
No, I would say not. It's not working for anyone. So we need to be creative, and we need to be open-minded, and we need to work across all levels of government. This is, we need to be collaborative and really, I think we need to be approaching these issues with empathy and recognizing the complexity of them as well.
Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, happy to.
Appreciate you making time for us. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Great. Thank you. I really appreciate the time.
And that was Councillor Lisa Dominato. Read more about tiny home villages and other supports for ending homelessness at thetaii.ca.
C
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.